I would have probably seen a ton of movies, but like over here, the show times are terrible. If I want to see an Oscar movie, I often have to drive all the way across town because it's only playing in one auditorium and one theater and like three times a day. Anyway, this is all stuff we could be talking about on the podcast.
Yeah. Well, I started recording so we
could start this. Hooray.
So we're talking about the Oscars. So what? Which movies haven't you seen, Matt? Of the Best Picture nominees.
The two that I missed were American Fiction and Anatomy of a Fall.
I was really hoping American Fiction would be seen by someone.
I really wanted to see it.
I think that's the one we're all going to miss, that we all didn't see.
Well, it's because we're all racist, right?
I'm kidding, I see Click Killers of the Flower Moon, so I'm not anti-Native American.
I actually just saw Zone of Interest today. Yeah, I think we've had a pretty strong year overall, at least in the top tier of movies. I'm really happy that Past Lives got recognition. I'm really happy that Poor Things got recognition. I still think that Oppenheimer should take it and will take it. Obviously, I'm biased, but I mean, it's not biased in the sense that I'm going to get any more money out of my association with that film, but I just, I really enjoyed that movie. I paid to see it twice, and then I saw it for free a third time. So in IMAX. So Oppenheimer was the best experience of my year, so I'm pulling for that pretty much all the way. Anyway, that was just kind of a quick spiel.
What was the what were the movies that you didn't see, Jason?
I'm not going to have a whole lot to say in this episode because I didn't see a lot of them. Out of the best pictures, let me just look. There we go. It's easier to say the stuff I did see. No, there's six of them I didn't see. I saw The Holdovers. I saw Barbie. I saw Oppenheimer, and I saw Past Lives, and that's it. I really wanted to see pretty much all the rest of them. I heard good things about all the rest of them.
The ones I didn't see were American Fiction, Zone of Interest, and Poor Things, but they're finally all on streaming, so hopefully we'll watch all of them by the Oscars, or at least two of them. It seems like Dana's resisting Poor Things, so I might have to watch that one solo. Interest in American Fiction.
Poor Things is not an easy watch, but I mean that's what you get from Yorgos Lanthimos, if I'm pronouncing his name correctly. I actually think it might be an easier watch than The Killing of a Sacred Deer or a Lobster, but it's still not an easy watch.
Yeah, he does make difficult.
Yeah, I assume so. Yeah, but it has been a pretty good year. I mean, especially considering, that Oppenheimer and Barbie came this year and made their splash. But then there's all these like sleeper, like Scorsese had this, I guess, bombastic movie that I was like, slightly underwhelmed by. But to me, it was like a slightly better version of what was the last one he did, The Irishman. It was kind of like The Irishman with Native Americans. I just felt like a bit too should have been like a 4 to 5 episode miniseries instead of like a movie. But I appreciated it. Like, the story was important. It's just that, you know, like, if he had done for Killers of the Flower Moon what Nolan did to Oppenheimer, then it might be like a contending movie. But I appreciate it being in the top 10. I wouldn't give it a top 5, you know, me personally. But yeah, that was like that was the last one, actually. I finished watching it yesterday. It took us like 4 sittings, I think.
What is it streaming on?
It's on Apple TV.
Oh, no wonder.
Yeah, so I don't have any access for a month.
Yeah,
I mean, it's like, I think it's like $5.99 for a month, so, which is worth, it's the same as like a rental, basically. So it gave us time to watch the movie.
I wanted to see it in theaters, but like, I just couldn't muster up the willpower to do it. Not when it's like 3 hours long and no intermission.
It's not 3 hours. It's 3 hours and 45 minutes or something. It's
almost 4 hours long. No intermission. Like, get out of here.
It's 3:26 actually, but yeah, but still, that's
three and a half hours. It's like, come on.
I saw it in theaters, and I spent the last hour or so of the movie with my legs crossed, feeling the need to pee, and I can't go. And if I uncross my legs, I'm just gonna pee my pants. So
it's not like it's a Zack Snyder movie where you can just get up and walk out and pee and then come back.
You probably could, but it's just like, why are we there? Like, why are we in this predicament where people are just forced to like miss a part of the movie in order to like be comfortable with their bladder? Like, I just, it's so weird what's going on with that. That's like, you don't go to anything where you're forced, like anything that's longer than an hour and a half, like a theater or even concerts. Like, sometimes they, you know, they give you like an encore or something, or you can go, or you know, sometimes, like, you know, with concerts actually it's easier, because if they start playing a song that you're not that into, it's a perfect cue for you to like go pee and come back. But in any case, but this is a movie you've never seen before. You want to kind of not miss any part of the, you know, if they really think it's supposed to be that long because they couldn't cut anything out, it means that you're supposed to watch the whole thing. But that's a contradiction if they don't allow you to watch the whole thing. But, you know,
it's just ridiculous.
Actually, it was kind of funny. I didn't think about this until I was like halfway through my projectionist run on Oppenheimer, where somebody was asking if they could do, if we could have done like reel to reel or something like that. And I just kind of thought about it for a moment. Like, well, our projector is designed for 3D. So like, actually it wouldn't be that difficult for us to have, like, we've got these 4 platters. We could just have 2 platters for the first half of the movie, or for like, you know, up until the bomb goes off. Spoiler alert. yeah, we did. And then have the second 2 platters designated for the last portion, the last hour of the movie. And we could just have an intermission there. All that would require is me just doing a quick, you know, re-threading of the projector. And I could totally do that. I mean, it's a 2D movie. It doesn't take that long. I mean, if you're an experienced IMAX projectionist, you can thread a film in about 5 minutes. So
the real question here is just, what's wrong with society that this isn't just a normal thing? That's the problem. Not can it be done? Because we all know it can be done. I mean, and I'm not one of those people. There's a lot of people out there, I hear, that just complain about movies being too long. I think movies, if they were meant to be 3 hours plus, then they're meant to be 3 hours plus. Do whatever is best for your movie. That's fine. Just, you know, the moment you get over 2.5 hours, give us an intermission. In fact, just as a rule of thumb, maybe just do it as soon as you hit 2 hours. You know,
2 hours. Yeah.
I mean, and I'm not saying at the 2 hour mark, of course. I'm saying the moment, just as a rule of thumb, when a movie exceeds 2 hours, just put an intermission in. You know, I mean, like, it's not hard. You know, we could, as a society, we could change this. We could make this better, and it would help theaters make more money off concessions. It would help all of us not get, you know, not have problems with our bladder. I don't know. It's just,
yeah.
It's just,
the whole argument,
I don't want to harp on it. It's just stupid.
Yeah, that the studios, something about the studios, because like they don't want to do that because they can get more showings in if there's no intermission. Barely. But at the same time, whoever's gonna watch the movie is gonna see the movie, whether like there's four planes of it or five or six or three, it'll just play longer. You know, it used to be that movies like Titanic or like Forrest Gump were like in theaters for 6 months because people couldn't get enough of them. They kept going back. And if so, you know, even with an intermission, a movie like that can do well because people, it'll just stay longer in theaters. So, yeah, ultimately, that's, I think, what it comes down to. Like, if you have an intermission for Barbie, you really think it would have made less money? No, yeah. People would still go and watch it. Like, oh, it would just be in theaters an extra month or two longer. But in any case, but yeah, I will say about Oppenheimer, I appreciate the fact that Nolan stuck to the 3 hours and no more. Like, he didn't go over the 3 hours. But I do feel like, even though it's not my favorite movie of the year, I do think it should win and it will win. But it probably could have been like 30 minutes shorter, you know, that one. But that's just like my thoughts about it. So definitely that one, Killers of the Flower Moon, some pacing issues. What was the movie that, so Matt, you saw Poor Things and The Zone of Interest. So those are the two movies that neither Jason or I have seen. What do you think about those two?
So Poor Things, first of all, just visually gorgeous, just very well shot. If Oppenheimer doesn't win cinematography, I kind of hope that Poor Things will. Though I did see Maestro, and that's also and also Killers of the Flower Moon, they're all really good. Oh, by the way, this year, first year in a long time where all but one of the cinematography nominees were shot on film.
That's cool.
Yeah, the only one that wasn't shot on film was Maestro. Poor Things, it's one of those things that, like, it would be a statement if it won Best Picture, but it's too much of a statement for Hollywood because, like, the entire movie is about, like, this mad professor puts the brain of a child into a grown woman. And it's a child experiencing sexual pleasure as an adult woman through an adult woman's body and not really and trying to process what that actually means. And it is a really weird movie. I feel awkward even explaining the premise of it.
The fact that Poor Things?
Yeah.
Okay, and, sorry. I was just like confused for a second. Go ahead.
But yeah,
like, it's, no, it's not The Zone of Interest.
Shit.
It's like, was that some sort of Nazi experiment?
Right.
No.
Now, in contrast, my biggest criticism of Zone of Interest is it's basically shot like a spy fam, like, Pornhub video. I mean, the entire thing is like GoPros that never go anywhere. And yeah,
it's like candid camera.
You could actually imagine a porn video just being shot like zone of interest. I mean,
well, there, not even porn video. It's kind of like the real world, the Nazi edition or something.
Yeah. I mean, there's a good story there. It's just not directed very well. And I mean, the director went in a certain direction, and director went in a direction, but it just didn't work for me. But Poor Things is probably like number four on my list for Best Picture this year. Right now, my hierarchy is Oppenheimer, Past Lives, The Holdovers, and then Poor Things.
Oppenheimer, Past Lives, The Holdover, and Poor Things.
Yeah.
Okay. Mine would be, it's tough. It is a toss between Anatomy of a Fall and The Holdovers. I haven't seen all of them, but let's say Anatomy of a Fall, just because. So both of you haven't seen it yet?
Correct. No, I was trying to see it, and I think I had to pay money to watch it on Prime.
Yeah, so I would say Anatomy of a Fall is probably the most impressive movie I've seen this year, considering what it is. I just think that it's like, it's the for the first time that I've seen someone elevate something so much with the way it's handled, which is so rare, because it's tough to find. We always talk about these movies like if only Christopher Nolan directed it or Denis Villeneuve. Like there's so few like stellar directors out there that elevate material that like that one, I was like, it's for what it is, the fact that it's so good is very impressive. And The Holdovers, definitely, I was very pleasantly surprised, because at this point, I don't know what to expect from Alexander Payne. He's a master, but at the same time, you know, he's later into his career. He had the whole...
His last movie was bad.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, it was like a more science fiction thing, so it was like a bit of a...
That's not the problem, though. It just, I mean, at the end of the day, it wasn't a good movie.
Yeah, no, it's problematic, but he definitely definitely a return to form.
Absolutely,
I feel like, and then I think Oppenheimer would be third for me. I do think it's a very important movie, and I'm glad Nolan finally did a very serious movie, straight through, probably just to get that Oscar, and he deserves it, obviously, because he is most like important. I think a lot of people would consider him like the biggest filmmaker in the world right now. It's kind of like the Spielberg of our day. Yeah. And then I think Maestro and Past Lives, I would be kind of in the same place. I think they're both really good. Like they're both really, really good, really well made. I might even like potentially give, I was very impressed with Maestro. Even though I know Bradley Cooper did a good job with The Star Is Born and stuff, I really feel like he got even better. He elevated himself like with that one. He really just took the directing thing seriously and just really like try to come up with the concept. A little bit like reminded me of Kenneth Branagh when he did the movie. We talked about it like I think a couple of years ago, was it?
Dead Again?
No, not Dead Again. The one that was nominated for an Oscar.
Belfast.
Which one?
Oh, yeah, Belfast. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that was a great movie.
Yeah, yeah. Where he when someone like say like him or Bradley Cooper that made one movie that was a bit more straightforward, but then all of a sudden they shift and they do a movie that's a lot more, not to say artistic per se, but just it takes bigger swings. The visuals, the concepts, like the language, the cinematic language. So that's that. I really appreciated it. And Past Lives.
Huh? Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then just to finish, like Past Lives, similar thing. Like especially because it's a debut feature, it was very, very impressive that it held together. Because a movie like that could have easily just not worked. So if, like having the right cast, the right sensitivity in directing, it is very impressive, so I think that's sort of like my top five in a way. And then I've Barbie and Killers of the Flower Moon is like two movies that like they're done really well. They're important movies, but just not at the level of the other ones. And then the other three I didn't see.
Yeah, you know, regarding Bradley Cooper, like I actually did have this thought while watching Maestro. Like, I want to see Bradley Cooper do a Kenneth Branagh, do a Ben Affleck, and actually direct a movie that he's not in. Like, that he's not acting. Like, just direct the movie. Because, I mean, he did make a huge leap. I didn't like A Star Is Born. I was heavily critical of that movie. I thought that he did a serviceable job, and they had some great music and everything, but I wasn't a huge fan of the story. I wasn't a huge fan of, a lot that went into it. Maestro, like, he made a lot of really great directorial decisions. I would love to see him make a movie, you know, and also when it comes to Kenneth Branagh, I mean, like, he was directing movies since 1989. I mean, he's been around for a long time, both as an actor and as a director. Ben Affleck, you know, eventually, you know, in his filmography, he decided to just, well, it, actually, his first big directorial exercise was him entirely behind the camera and not in front of it and Gone Baby Gone. I would love to see Bradley Cooper just direct a movie and not be in front of the camera, just entirely focused on directing, because I think the guy has the talent to make something great, and it's not to say that Maestro wasn't great, it's just to say that if you focus on one thing rather than trying to double task, you might be able to do better. So I would really like to see Bradley Cooper's next directorial project be a movie that he is not in himself.
Yeah, I mean, they say that often the issue is that the way they get these movies greenlit is that because they also act in it and they come as a package, so they sort of save on the budget a bit as far as like having to hire another like big name star to elevate the movie. But I'm sure it's coming. I'm sure as long as he sticks with it, he's also a bit. I think I saw an article about, like, you know, that Bradley Cooper should stop trying to win an Oscar type of thing, that he's a little bit doing, like, not necessarily the Matt Damon, Ben Affleck thing, but you know, he is writing these vehicles for himself that he knows other people wouldn't give him, like, because they don't see that depth in him. They don't think he can pull it off. They would give it to, like, a different actor. So it's weird. Yeah, because it's weird how Bradley Cooper's career has gone, because he's a very good actor. He's very good looking. Maybe not like a Brad Pitt or DiCaprio type of like quality, but he's a solid actor. But he's just not given, I feel like he hasn't been given like a serious shot from a serious filmmaker for a lead role, like a Tarantino, Paul Thomas Anderson, that level of a director type of thing. But so he kind of had to write roles for himself, you know, but it hasn't worked out yet. I don't think he's going to win anything, but he's getting close.
Yeah. I mean, his performance in Maestro was pretty damn fantastic. I'll give him that.
Yeah. Who is he up against? Like the best actor.
Right. Right. I mean, I would still give it to Cillian Murphy. Every day of the week and twice on Sunday, but
exactly. I mean, also Jeffrey Wright, Paul Giamatti. I mean, if it wasn't Cillian Murphy, I would give it to Paul Giamatti. I haven't seen the Jeffrey Wright performance. I'm sure that one's also good.
And, you know, I am aching to see Paul Giamatti finally win Best Actor at some point. Like, that guy is freaking amazing.
Yeah, me too.
But I mean, to be fair, like, again, Cillian Murphy has been around for what, 30 years now, and you know, finally, it's just one of those things where, like, people who have been following his career, not, which is not very many people, way back in the 20-aughts when he made 28 Days Later. And by the way, they're making 28 Years Later pretty soon, and apparently he's going to be in it. I mean, that guy is freaking amazing. I mean, even if you didn't like Sunshine as a movie, Cillian Murphy was really good in it. he's like in my top five list of people that I would like to actually take portraits of, just because he has such an interesting freaking face. But he just knocked that role out of the park in Oppenheimer, and I mean, he deserves it. You know, he's a versatile actor. He's been around the block several times, and he just nailed it. And I'm all for him finally winning it. But I mean, again, it's just, yeah. I mean, Paul Giamatti, the combination of Paul Giamatti and Alexander Payne will always rip my heart out. In the best possible
work well together.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Jason, the ones that you saw, what would be your rankings?
We're talking about just the ones that were actually nominated.
Nominated, yeah, and you've seen. Like, how would you?
Well, I'm not gonna tell you what I think about the ones I haven't seen.
Yeah, exactly. No, because also you don't have to tell me about movies that are not nominated for Best Picture, but we can talk about other categories.
Yeah.
Well, you can say what your personal favorite is too. Like, that's a good point.
Well, we could talk about that later.
Was outside of the list.
We could talk about that later. I was going to say, I think three or four of the best movies of the year weren't nominated for anything. But anyway. Just to reiterate, the only four that I actually saw were the holdovers, Barbie, Oppenheimer, and Past Lives. Pretty much this year for the Oscars, I would just hope that not one over the other, really, but just that the holdovers and Oppenheimer pretty much sweep. If that were to happen, I'd be pretty happy. I think that Oppenheimer might have been the best movie of the year, probably. The holdovers is really, really good. Just like what Gil said, it's a total return to form for Alexander Payne. I've loved every one of Alexander Payne's movies, and I was really let down by his last one, I should say, all but that one. And I had such high hopes for it that it was just this like really big disappointment that year. And then when I saw the trailer, I didn't even watch the whole trailer. When I saw like 20 to 30 seconds of the trailer for the holdovers, I was like, that's right up his alley. That's what he needs to do, is a movie just like that. And it did not disappoint at all. It was actually a little bit better than I expected it to be. If either Paul Giamatti or Cillian Murphy win for Best Actor, I'd be perfectly happy with either one. And as far as the Best Picture, I probably would lean a little bit more to Oppenheimer just because I think it's a bigger achievement. But I'd be just super happy if the holdovers won too. Either one of those is fine. Poor Things was great. I think I liked it twice as much as I thought I was going to. It's a really good movie. We already talked a lot about Barbie. It's a good movie, but I don't, with these 10 movies being here, I don't really think it deserved Best Picture nomination, but it was good. Just not as good as the hype. And then
yeah, I feel like Barbie and Killers of the Flower Moon, if it was only five, I would not leave them in for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And then sadly, I didn't see any of the rest. I really wanted to see a lot of them. Even today, I thought about paying for something and watching it, and I got home and I was just exhausted and I couldn't keep my eyes open. I had to sleep. But yeah, anyway, as far as best picture, that's where I think. As far as best actor, that's what I think. Sadly, all five of the movies that have nominated people for best actress, I did not see. I'm even really upset. Like when I got home, I tried to see if I could watch The Boy and the Heron, which was the Miyazaki film that came out this year, that's nominated for best animated feature. I didn't see any of the five movies that are nominated, which is really weird for me, for animation. I wanted to see The Boy and the Heron when it was in theaters, and it was just one of those situations where it's like it's playing in so few theaters and so few auditoriums, and it was in and out in like a week and a half over here in Vegas. I just miss the way things used to be when I lived in LA and I could go at my leisure and see stuff all over the place. Anyway, it just was a weird year for me when it came to Oscar stuff. I just didn't see a whole lot of what was out there. As far as best director, I considering that Oppenheimer is the only one I saw, I would definitely vote for Christopher Nolan. I wish that Alexander Payne was nominated as well, because I would love for that one to win best director as well, but it's not nominated.
Jason, just to be clear, you said four things in your Oscar rankings. Did you mean
past lives? I said poor things.
Oh, past lives.
Sorry, on the thing I'm reading right here on Google, they are right next to each other. They both start with a P, and they're two words. Past Lives was great. I did not see Poor Things, even though I tried very hard to see that. Over this last week, there was still one theater showing it here in Vegas, and it was like I would have had to go at like 9:30 at night on a weekday, and it was just not going to happen.
Yeah, I would say for the directing part, I second the fact that I haven't seen all the movies, but I would probably bump Scorsese out because he's been nominated a lot, and he broke a record because of this nomination. So fine, give it to him. But I think Alexander Payne should have been in there. But I would lean, again, haven't seen a couple of the movies there that are nominated, but I would lean towards giving it to The Anatomy of a Fall director. And she is a woman. So, you know, all the people that are like upset that Greta Gerwig wasn't nominated, she's a woman. And I'm voting for her because I really think that was the best directed movie, maybe only like second to Oppenheimer, as far as like the how impressive the
directing.
Yeah, like just did the Past Lives also remind me of that. I mentioned that to a few movies. It's just like the threading of a needle. Same thing with Alexander Payne, but you expect that of him because he's a master. Yeah. It's like these scenes, these moments. I remember we did that episode, which I guess we'll post after this. but we talked about an episode, a movie recently about Savior, and we're talking about like how a lot of the scenes felt like, but just any movie where you feel like that the scenes just weren't completely worked out and they're like half baked. So in a lot of these movies, like Anatomy of a Fall, like Past Lives, and The Holdovers, it really feels like those movies could have been like B movies. They could have been nothing movies. Yeah. They could have been not nominated for a single award if the directing wasn't as precise as it was. Like the story itself is not that tremendous. The premise is not that tremendous, but it's the way it's treated. And
that's definitely how I feel about Past Lives. It's like that movie could easily have just been a dud, and it's so good.
Yeah, so I do appreciate that part. So, well, I just out of curiosity before I forget to ask, what were the 2 to 3 movies that you liked that weren't nominated?
Oh, the ones that I was talking about?
I didn't see too many movies this year beyond
that. I think the 4 best movies of the year, actually, that I saw were Oppenheimer, The Holdovers, Godzilla Minus One, and John Wick 4. No, I wouldn't expect either of those to be nominated for Best Picture. I'm just saying that I think that those 4 were the best movies I saw all year.
Oh yeah, what's the foreign the international feature films? There's
there's that one.
Society of the Snow is making a lot of the Zone of Interest.
Zone of Interest is probably going to win.
So that's the only one that's double nominated.
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, and Anatomy of a Fall wasn't nominated for international movie because there's too much English in it. But it's technically a German movie. Is it really? It's a German movie made in France. So it's like German, French, English. But it's a lot of English because the lead is German and she lives with her husband who's French in France.
It's the common language.
So the common language is English. Like her French is not good enough, so she uses English a lot of the movie. That movie is just all over the place. Like it's almost like a Nolan movie in the sense of like you're like this is just there's too much going on here, but it just works. It just works. You can't explain it. It just works. It's like the Dark Knight of like
I really want to see it.
Courtroom dramas. But I might be building it up a bit too much, but I do think that it's an impressive movie for what it is. Yeah, that would be, I guess, my recommendation. If you're going to see another movie before the Oscars, is like try to catch that one. I think it's worthwhile.
I can see it. I think I just have to pay $3, like $2.99. So I'll probably try to do that.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's for rent. That's how we watched it. It's like $5.99.
It's on Prime, something. I think. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, yeah. Like on Prime or YouTube, you can rent it. And Prime is like $5.99. YouTube is $6.99. So there's like options. Any other categories?
Yeah, a couple of things. I was just looking through to see if there was anything else nominated that I'd seen. Best visual effects was Godzilla Minus One, Guardians of the Galaxy 3, Napoleon, The Creator, and Mission Impossible. While I do think that Godzilla Minus One was one of my 4 favorite movies of the entire year, I don't know if I would say that it deserved an Oscar nom for best visual effects, because there's a couple moments where it shows that it's like it's not the most expensive effects you've ever seen. There's a couple moments where you're like, it's a little questionable. The thing is that it's like mind-blowing that they made it look as amazing as it did on like probably less than $10 million budget for the entire movie. So it's like, if that was the award, best effects for the given budget, it deserves to win hands down. But the thing is, that's not really what the category is.
Yeah.
And, you know, although Guardians and The Creator both look really awesome.
It is nice to see that whether it was back when who's his face, Bong Joon something, when he did the what was the movie with the sea monster thing, the host.
The Host, yes.
Yeah, yeah. So like a lot of these movies that get like some special effects that are Korean and Japanese, and it's nice to see that it's that they're going in that direction, because I'm sure there's a lot of talent there, and yes, they could do it much cheaper than Hollywood, because Hollywood has got like the unions and the this and the that, and like and even though they farm out like special effects and whatnot, it's still like just everything is like super expensive in the U.S. It's nice to see people like almost like ending the whole special effects thing.
Yeah, I mean, and just to reiterate, Godzilla Minus One looked amazing. It just didn't look quite as amazing as some of the other movies, but it also was working off of a budget that's like less than a tenth of what these other ones were made for. So
I think the Creator was also was done pretty cheaply compared to what it was.
Probably, I assume. It looked great.
That's what I heard.
Really good. Yeah, I put The Creator in my top 10, barely. It was a close call for the last one or two spots, but yeah, I put it up there. I thought it was really good.
Creators, 80 million in the budget, which is pretty cheap for a big Hollywood movie.
Yeah, tell you, for 80 million, considering what 80 million gets you, that's it looks pretty dang good. I did, like I said before, I didn't make it to the live action short films this year, because again, with the show times being super late, I did see the animated short films, and unfortunately, because, well, I don't want to get into it, but due to some faulty information, I got there a little bit late and I missed one of them. But out of the five nominated ones, I think that the War Is Over one is the best one. It's like the one about that kind of that song that John Lennon and Yoko made. That one's really good. And I think it was like a Weta one too. So I kind of expected it to be amazing. But and then there's another one, the Five Senses, or the 95 Senses. That's weird. I don't remember that's what being called. Anyway, that one was good. It just, they were all pretty decent, but those two stood out for me, I think. But the War Is Over one probably should win.
Yeah, I'm trying to think what else. I guess like adapted is the whole like thing about Barbie being nominated.
That is so for ridiculous. Adapted.
I'm looking at the original from screenplay. What? Yeah, because I don't know if the fear was.
What's next? Are we going to say that not that it ever would have gotten nominated for anything, but because it was a garbage movie, but like we're going to say that, like, you know, that Battleship was an adapted screenplay also because it was based off of a Hasbro toy.
Like, a toy. I mean, come on. Transformers.
Like, yeah, I mean, this is not an adapted screenplay. It's inspired, if anything. But I mean, that's like saying that an original football movie was adapted because it was inspired by people playing football. You know, no, that's not what adapted means.
it was a garbage screenplay. It just wasn't adapted.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, because like I don't know if the concern was that like it just wouldn't get a nomination if it wasn't the original screenplay, but I mean there is that May December movie, and the original screenplay, which I feel like probably could have been bumped for Barbie, you know, if push comes to shove, but yeah, that is weird.
I'm hoping that The Holdovers wins for original screenplay.
Yeah, that would be nice, Also, I wouldn't mind for that one too. Anatomy of a Fall is really
or that
well.
One. Maybe I haven't watched it yet.
Past Lives also, I wouldn't mind because it is like we said, like just kind of threads that needle. I do wonder about the adapted. I mean, I think there's a chance like Nolan would win that. Probably not. I wonder if they'll give that to Barbie. I don't know. That'll be interesting to see. Actually,
If Barbie beats Oppenheimer on Eddie, I will turn off the Oscars and I will not watch them for 10 years. That will be like when Renee Zellweger won for Cold Mountain. Like, you know, no, done. No.
bad Oscars, bad.
We have established that Matt definitely doesn't like Barbie far worse than or feels that it's a much worse movie than myself or Gil, but I wouldn't have a problem with Barbie winning something. I would have a problem with it winning this screenplay thing because it's not an adapted screenplay. So for it's gonna be one of those dumb things that we're talking about 3 years from now where we're like, oh, remember when it won? And then it's like, remember all that like garbage where everyone was talking about it being not adapted, and it's like, yeah, because it's not, you know, it's just gonna be this talking point because it's such a stupid thing for it to be in that category.
I mean, maybe if you think ejaculating pink on the screen is good production design, it should win production design.
Matt. So Matt,
I would be pretty happy though if I'll be pretty happy if I'm Just Ken won best song.
I wouldn't have a problem with that. What's it up against?
There's the What Was I Made For from Barbie, and then there's one from Killers of the Flower Moon, and then there's one from American Symphony, John Batiste, and The Fire Inside from Flaming Hot. I guess these are like documentaries, maybe.
The Fire Inside is a movie about the guy who invented Flaming Hot Cheetos or something like that.
Oh, I see.
I didn't know that there was a song in it. That's interesting.
Yeah. So, what are the documentary feature? Is okay. So it's not nominated. It's just got a song. Yeah. It's a feature.
Yeah. Last year, I saw one or two of the documentaries. I didn't see anything this year.
Yeah. I actually have a strong aversion to documentaries.
Oh, really?
I mean, documentaries fall into that weird space where they're not the news in which, like, there is a clear ethical, even though obviously the news breaks this ethical, contract all the time, but the news is supposed to be entirely truthful, and fictional movies that are supposed to be just entertainment and lies. And I find that most documentaries are just lying to you. So, I mean, if you give me something like a Free Solo, where you don't have any reason to lie to me, and it's just going to be an interesting story about this interesting guy, sure, but most of them are political and, you know, they pull the Michael Moore bullshit and they lie to you. So, like,
I'm pretty sure I think it's all Michael Moore. I think Michael Moore just ruined documentaries for you.
No, I've worked on documentaries where I've just witnessed the video maker trying to milk something out of somebody who was like a genuinely good person in order to flip it on him later on in editing and everything like that. So I will have no association with documentaries on set for the rest of my life.
I think documentaries certainly have their place. I love seeing a great documentary, but I don't disagree with you on Matt that even the best ones I've ever seen, when I've looked them up later, they do seem to have been somewhat, the narrative seems to be manipulated a little bit. Like, I think King of Kong is like in the top five greatest documentaries of all time. And then I came to find out that, like, sadly, that the narrative in that documentary is pushed pretty hard to one side. I think Herzog has some really good ones, and I've seen a few that I thought were really good. There was one last year or the year before about a guy saving two brothers, like saving a bunch of like hawk falcon birds or something like that. I don't know, some sort of bird of prey that was really good. I can't remember what it was called. That one was really good, but I don't know. I think that they have their place for sure. It's just, I think if you're going to go into a movie or into a documentary, just know that there's probably, what you're getting isn't 100% unfiltered truth. And then, if you learn a lot from it, that's probably a good thing.
I mean, if Herzog calls me up and says, "Hey, Matt, will you do my next documentary?" I'm going to fucking do it.
He's amazing. not to change the subject, but did you hear, is there a reason why there's only four nominees for Best Cinematography?
That kind of threw me off, because I thought that it was completely, I actually blanked on this. El Conte was nominated, at least it's listed, but it's not listed when you Google it. That was the one that was shot digitally. Everything else was shot on film. Maestro was shot on film. Four Things was shot on film. Oppenheimer obviously was shot on film. And El Conte is the one that I didn't see.
It's Pablo Larraín. It's on Netflix.
And director of photography, Ed Lockman, who, I mean, he's pretty good. He bothers me sometimes with his overfiltration and so on and so forth. But, this is another difficult thing for me, but I'm still behind Oppenheimer winning cinematography, but I mean Maestro was really well done by Matthew Libatique, and I mean Robbie Ryan knocked it out of the park with with Poor Things, and Rodrigo Prieto with Colors of the Flower Moon. But I think Ed Lockman is the one guy who's just like not gonna win, obviously, because apparently Google isn't even associating him with with the award.
He shows up on the Oscars.org website.
Yeah, right.
But I mean, you know, Pablo Larraín is a big time director. That's but it does look like it's a pretty obscure, like he's more Chilean based movie, not like it's not like a English language or anything.
Yeah. For me, Oppenheimer number one, and probably Maestro number two. Poor Things number four, number three, and Killers of the Flower Moon number four would be my ranking. And my reasoning behind that is that Oppenheimer, first of all, did everything. Hoyt von Hoytma did everything that he did on what is relatively a shoestring budget, and in a relatively lacking amount of time, and they were so creative. I mean, when you see the building rocking around Oppenheimer while he's giving a speech after the bombing of Hiroshima, like they did that practically. That was projection. They actually did that through projectors. That was not like any kind of CGI or anything like that. That was created by the cinematographer and by the director. Every time that the screen went bright throughout that movie, they were operating wireless DMX, which is incredibly hard. And they're doing it on perfect cues throughout the production. They're taking risks, and they're doing it with the largest, most cumbersome movie cameras on the face of the planet. And somebody has to get awarded for that. Now, Maestro is second because I feel like Matthew Libatique was basically trying to channel Gordon Willis in Manhattan for like the first third of the movie. I don't think that he did it. I don't think that he achieved it, but he was pretty close. Colors of the Flower Moon was just basically a beautifully shot movie. It just didn't stick out to me, and obviously El Conte, I just didn't see it, so I can't rank it. So but
I was looking at the trailer. It looks pretty good. It's always, he always has interesting compositions and stuff, Pablo Larraín. I was gonna say before we close, final thoughts, but about Oppenheimer. What drives me nuts about this movie is a lot of the press that they're talking about the fact that there is like a very minimal budget for it, for what it was, for the scope of it. I don't know. Mm. What was it? Like Oppenheimer budget. This really, really bothers me. Yeah, it's like $100 million. And this is like a big movie with a big cast and like and some effects, and they're shooting like IMAX and whatnot. Like, this bothers me even more than No Intermissions. Like, this is the biggest director in the fucking world. Everything he does, like, even Tenet made some money, like, and that was like a one-off. Like, all his movies make a ton of money, and even if he didn't, even if Oppenheimer made $50 million, I don't give a shit. This is the biggest movie director in the world. He needs a blank check. He should not be confined. Like, we should, it's ridiculous to me that anybody doubted that he can pull this off and make it successful and at least make like $200 million on it. And he made close to $1 billion. Like, yeah. There's these stories like from the production designer, because I listened to the Roger Deakins podcast with her. She's talking about like Nolan did this whole thing because like of like restrictions on the budget, where he crammed the schedule, like he cut like 10 days of the schedule or 5 days?
He got 30 days. He got 30 days.
Yeah, so like he found a way to like cut the time in order to save a ton of money so they can get all the production design that they need and all the whatnot. And I'm like, what the fuck are we doing as a society if we're not giving a blank check to one of the greatest artists that ever existed? Like, what are we doing? Like, that's just nuts to me that, like, they didn't say, like, you know what, take another $50 million. I don't want you to stress. We need you to be healthy. We want you to make many more movies because you're amazing. What the fuck are we? What's wrong with us? Like, I don't understand studios that give, like, the best and top director in the world, they give him shit. You know, like, it's just, and it's not as if, like, Spielberg, where he makes a movie every year. He makes a movie every 3 to 4 years. So, you know, it's not like, I understand, like, Spielberg, like, late in his career, he does, like, 2 movies a year. That's, like, I understand if you have to be slightly concerned about the budget with those movies. But this guy, every movie's a fucking event. Give the guy a blank check. Yeah, I don't understand this.
I actually did the math on the shooting schedules for Barbenheimer and everything. With Oppenheimer's shooting schedule, they were basically shooting at a rate of 3.25 pages a day, which for a movie of that size is fucking amazing. I mean,
it does have a lot of dialogue, but
yeah, but I mean, you know that. I mean, shooting 10 pages a day on like a micro budget is grueling. They shot 3.25 pages a day. The shooting schedule for Barbie, given its runtime and its schedule, was basically just under 1.5 pages a day.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I'm looking here. I looked it up, the Oppenheimer budget, and below it, it says people also searched Killers of the Flower Moon, $200 million. What the fuck is wrong with us? Killers of the Flower Moon should have been $100 million, and this should have been $200. I mean, like, that's crazy. And there's no way Killers of the Flower Moon even made, like, half that much in box office. I think it was mostly just funded by Apple, which they don't lack any money, but I mean, come on. That's, as a society, there's something wrong with us. When the top director in the world has a passion project and everything he does makes a ton of money, for the most part, you know, Tenet like was really a one-off thing. Like, he didn't make a single
Tenet
movie that
had the whole COVID thing.
And it had the pandemic and everything. Yeah, yeah. Tenet would have made easily $400 or $500 million, even if it's not his best movie. But it just drives me crazy that, like, he comes and says, like, you know, oh yeah, well, I'm going to make this movie about Oppenheimer. It's going to be a serious movie, but maybe a bit of an Oscar bait. And, you know, it's like, yeah, but, you know, maybe 100 million. Can you pull it off for 100? Shut the fuck up. Give him what he wants. What are you talking about?
I mean, you're correct that as a society, that's that reflects poorly on us, but also just as an industry, that reflects poorly. This guy, you know, your opening statement of this guy being one of the greatest artists of our time, give him a blank check. I mean, that can be something that's very subjective to say, but this guy has also, forget about his artistic endeavors, which of course, you know, his results have been amazing, but just his box office draw is time and time again proven itself. I don't understand why he would have any trouble getting money. It's really pretty surprising.
Well,
and if I'm not mistaken, I didn't read up on it, but if I'm not mistaken, Warner Brothers, who he made most of his movies with, didn't want to do it, and he ended up doing with Universal Pictures. So and Warner Brothers did well for themselves with Barbie this year, but come on, this could have been like one of their best years ever if they had like produced like Oppenheimer.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, beyond Christopher Nolan being an artist, you know, like kind of what the point was that it was making and how efficient he was, is like he is not somebody who, forget the blank check. Say you just write him a check for, you know, $200 million. He is going to milk every dollar out of that. He is fucking efficient. Like, he just knows how to manage things in a way that other directors don't know how to do. I mean, like, there are other directors in the world, you know, a la Greta Gerwig, who probably could have made Barbie for, you know, $75 million, but it cost $150 million to make it, because she doesn't know how to direct things. She doesn't know how to manage things. She's not as good as Christopher Nolan. Christopher Nolan, if you give him $150 million, you're going to get like $200 million, $250 million in value. I mean, you look at Oppenheimer and you look at it blankly. I mean, most people aren't even going to think about how much it costs, but, you know, you ask people, hey, how much did you think that movie cost? Especially if they're coming out of a 1570 IMAX theater, they're probably going to say, oh, geez, that probably cost like $300 million. Hey, no, it was a third of that. You get people coming out of Barbie. How much did you think that cost? Like, well, maybe, you know, $100 million, $150 million, something like that. Yeah. Christopher Nolan knows how to manage these things. Christopher Nolan knows how to budget. Christopher Nolan doesn't just know how to tell stories. He knows how to be a manager on these sets and milk every penny that he gets. So, it's almost astonishing to think what Christopher Nolan would do with, you know, a quarter of $1 billion of a budget that we've given to much lesser filmmakers. I hope that Oppenheimer sweeps. That's what I'm going to say.
And I was counting.
Yeah, I guess how many awards Oppenheimer
is it? It's nominated for 12. I was reading your mind, Gil. Oppenheimer is nominated for 12. And the only other two I counted was Holdovers. The Holdovers is nominated for 5, and Maestro is nominated for 7. I'm sure there's others that have like 5 or 6 as well. I just didn't count them.
I'm assuming it's not going to break the record, but what's the, like, the record for it? Like,
good question.
Movie that's, with most.
I know that it's the Return of the King that won the most.
I guess, yeah, Return of the King, Titanic, and Ben-Hur, 11. Wow, so that would be tough for Oppenheimer, too.
There it is. Ben-Hur, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King, and... I see what you meant. They're all tied for 11. Good Lord.
They're all tied for 11.
Yeah, which I'm assuming Oppenheimer would get 11.
The original West Side Story got 10.
10. Yeah, it's the closest one.
The English Patient got 9? That movie was boring.
Yeah.
I don't think that Oppenheimer is going to break the record. I just hope that it wins in the most important categories, including cinematography and directing and best picture.
If The Holdovers won 3, I'd be happy. I think it's if The Holdovers won for like screenplay, best supporting actress, and I don't know, like one of the other three that it's one of the other five, I mean, that it's nominated for, I'd be pretty happy if it got 3 out of 5.
Oh, that's the thing. Emily
Blunt, I think
was fucking amazing in Oppenheimer.
Yes, she was.
Yeah,
I mean, she knocked
the
park.
I mean, I do think that, like, he could have potentially gotten something for Dunkirk, but I guess Dunkirk was a bit too of an oddball movie for the Oscars to embrace it. And Oppenheimer is still pretty crazy, like just the way it was done and the approach to it. But I guess it wasn't too crazy for it to just be accepted.
Yeah, but, actually, the critical drinker brought this up, and I think it's kind of interesting that I mean the critical drinker is just about as critical of Barbie as I am, but he actually said something interesting in Trigonometry that Oppenheimer probably benefited from Barbie better than Barbie benefited from Oppenheimer, that like the marketing phenomenon was so much focused on this Barbenheimer thing that a lot of people who would have only gone to see Barbie ended up going to Oppenheimer.
Yeah, no, I'm sure. I'm sure that, like, but even if it had made like a third or like half of what, it still would have been a successful movie.
13 nominations. Is Oppenheimer tied for the best or for the most nominations by one movie in one year?
I'm not aware.
I'm trying to see right now. Let's see. This isn't very.
It says, 12 movies with most nominations.
Curious Case of Benjamin Button's also had 13. The Shape of Water also had 13.
No, so I think it's like
Lord of the Rings common. Fellowship had 13.
How many the Return of the King? Because that was the one that
I'm looking. 11. I'm trying to see if the original Mary Poppins had 13 nominations. Just trying to. This is not a very well written article, so I can't really tell. Ugh, Chicago had 13 nominations. Ugh. That's sad. Okay, let's see here. Forrest Gump had 13. Is 13 the biggest number? I don't know. Shakespeare in Love had 13. Gone with the Wind had 13. Oh, there it is. Never mind. All About Eve had 14. And
La La Land.
La La Land had 14. And what's the last one?
Titanic.
Oh, Titanic had 14. So 14 is the record. And then there's a whole bunch of stuff tied at 13.
So it's crazy that La La Land ended up not winning, even though it was 14 nominations and 6 wins.
Well, I think it was the best movie that year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Such a crazy year. La La Land got fucked.
No, I mean, if I had to choose between Moonlight and La La Land, I think it was the year where I would have been happy if either of those won. But yes, La La Land was the more impressive movie, at least, like, but I don't know. I can also go for Moonlight.
Moonlight was good, but look, how many years ago was that? Like 6 years ago, 7 years ago, something like that. I don't know. However much time has passed between now and then, I barely think about anything in the movie Moonlight at all. Probably the most impressive thing in that movie is what's his name's performance, Mahershala. But yeah, I mean, it's a pretty darn good movie, but I don't really think about it that much at all. La La Land is a very memorable movie. Like, that movie is like still, I think, I mean, I still, whenever you hear people, the cast being, you know, interviewed with stuff, that stuff gets brought up all the time still. I mean, it's just that's a pretty lasting movie, I think, in my opinion.
It is pretty popular, yeah. But Moonlight, I think, was just more unique, which is fine. Maybe. You know, like an indie type of thing. La La Land is definitely the studio, you know, type of like movie. So it makes sense. It would be more of an Oscar.
But it also stands to reason. Musical.
Yeah, musicals are rare. Yeah.
You're right.
They're coming back now.
Yeah, they're coming back now because of La La Land.
No, man, yeah, there's like there's musicals every few years. I mean, like it's not like they don't exist. I mean, even before La La Land, there were several of them that came out.
I mean, I would never make this argument.
Nobody paid attention to.
Yeah. As far as like a Best Picture nominee, yeah. I mean, the fact, not to mention, it's also a movie about Hollywood, and it's about like, you know, trying to make it in the business, but in spite of all those like hindrances that they often can be, like, he pulled it off. It was definitely an impressive movie.
I mean, In the Heights would not exist without La La Land.
That's true.
On the screen, like, I know that it was already a play. In the Heights would not exist without La La Land.
Potentially, but also it's because of Lin-Manuel, because like he got famous from, you know, from the other play, from Hamilton, and that's why they probably greenlit, was like, you know, off of that success, and I'm assuming they're working on a Hamilton movie, because that's got to be like a big moneymaker. They pulled that off well.
Yeah.
So sure, but. I mean, In the Heights was a shit movie, and it got a bag of money because of La La Land.
Potentially, yes. I'm not disagreeing, but you know, there was like a few musicals. Like there was the one with Garfield, Tick Tick Boom.
Yeah,
that was a musical.
There's a difference between musicals and movies with music.
Yeah, that's a musical. I mean,
was it like, like it was a musical?
Tick Tick Boom was a musical, though.
Sorry.
It was a small musical, but you know, I mean, whether it's like Sweeney Todd or like Les Mis, or you know, there's a variety of like musicals that have come out in the last 10, 20 years. It's not like they're not non-existent. It's just that winning Academy Awards or being nominated for multiple Academy Awards, like, it's not super common. I agree.
Original musicals. That's the big thing. Original musicals.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, that's a good point.
No, I mean, there's no denying that, like, Damien Chazelle is, like, a generational talent. Like, the fact that he just, like, with a second movie, like, he comes out with that is just, that's just incredible. I mean, I guess third movie, but, like, second major movie. Yeah.
Yeah.
And also, like, you know, and the funny thing is Whiplash. I it's one of those movies that I've considered like doing an episode about, because like people really, really deeply love that movie. And I'm like, I get it. It's a decent movie, but I don't think, for example, I would take La La Land over Whiplash. Like, but
me too.
People really, it's got like a cult following, Whiplash. It's very strange. I'm glad, but I
love Whiplash, but. I mean, I love La La Land more, but I fucking love Whiplash. I mean, that is a really, well, I mean, it's a rough movie, and I love rough movies.
I didn't dislike his last one. I think it's good that he's like trying different things. Hopefully it doesn't like take him back too much. Like, you know, hopefully he bounces back because it wasn't like, you know, received super well.
Oh, I mean, if Margot Robbie was going to be nominated for an Oscar this year, it should have been for Babylon, not for Barbie. I mean, she knocked it out of the park with Babylon. I mean, Babylon wasn't Damien Chazelle's magnum opus. I think that he was trying to make it his magnum opus, and that's why it fell short. It was, I actually liked Babylon a lot more than most people. But, I mean, Margot Robbie was fantastic in that movie. And when the Oscar nominations came out and people were saying that she got snubbed for Barbie, I was kind of taken aback because, no, Margot Robbie was snubbed for Babylon. She wasn't snubbed for Barbie. Margot Robbie in Barbie was basically just going through the process. You know, it was just Margot Robbie being this phenomenally beautiful woman playing a Barbie doll and hamming it up for Greta Gerwig. Her role in Babylon was much more nuanced and much more impactful. She was so much better in Babylon. I mean, she is a generation.
But you know, she, it was released December 23rd, 2022. So I think it would have qualified for last year's awards.
Oh, fuck. I saw it early 2023. So.
Yes, maybe. Yeah, that's partially what it is. Because probably they had hopes that maybe it would like become a thing, but
But according to IMDb, it's a 2022 film.
Okay, yeah. My bad. But
yes, like she was very good in it for sure. Like she acted her ass off for sure in that movie.
So just for the record, I think that Margot Robbie is an incredible actress, and it's not just because she's gorgeous. She's freaking amazing. She's
I liked her in I, Tonya. That was a good performance.
Jeez. I mean,
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, obviously.
Also, yeah, but that was like a more minor role.
She was the third biggest character in the movie.
Yeah, third biggest character, but she had very little screen time. It's a bit of a so-so part, but and I haven't seen any of the any of her. I did see her in the James Gunn Suicide Squad. She was in that, but I didn't see any.
You don't need to see the other one. Don't worry.
But
granted,
her
and Will Smith are the only two good things in it, so there's that. But
yeah, I guess, but it is she is interesting because she is like in this, she's like unmatched. Also surprisingly short. She's like 5'6". She looks much taller in movies. She's like the best looking actress in the world right now. And she's also, she's extremely talented and she's like in that sweet spot now. Like she can do whatever she wants and producing her own stuff. So good for her. You know, that's always nice to see. I feel like just like a few years ago, it was
Jessica Chastain.
Jessica Chastain had like a period like maybe 4 or 5 years ago where she was the it girl. But yeah, unfortunately that kind of like, especially for women, unfortunately, that window is very short. But it's not to say that they can't have
Jessica Chastain still making good movies.
Exactly. It's just that like that being that it girl, it's something like, you know, like Brad Pitt was that it guy for or even DiCaprio for like at least 10, 15 years. Whereas like for a woman, it's like you got like five, you know, maybe. Before you're like the next one comes along or something, it's it is what it is. It's I think it's fine. Like I said, like you say, like, you know, as long as they have talent and they want to keep making good movies, they can have a long lasting career, like Meryl Streep and all these like great actresses. But but yeah, that It Girl thing is a very, very short period of time, so you have to kind of capitalize on it.
Well, I mean, that's the thing about Margot Robbie is that, I mean, when I look at what she's doing now, I would not be surprised if I turn 60 and she's receiving an Academy Award and she's become like our Meryl Streep, because she's just that good. Like, she's transcended the whole It Girl thing. She's just gone beyond, you know, like, hey, I'm really hot and people want to, and men want to look at me phase in her career. She gets to that point where she's just like recognized as, holy fuck, this girl knows how to act. This woman knows how to act. and it wouldn't faze me for a second. It wouldn't surprise me for a second if, like, she gets a lot older and I'm still around and she's receiving an Oscar for Best Actress because she's that good. I mean
kind of like a Nicole Kidman too. Yeah, there's
right. A few of those. She's generational talent. She's amazing.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if she's at the level of Nicole Kidman, but what I'm saying is, like, there's a lot of examples of like older women that have done very well for themselves, and I think it's all about, you know, accepting the fact that we don't stay at the same age. And especially women do age quicker than men when it comes to that. Like, there's the whole men have this advantage that, like, the sexy 40, 50-year-old, which doesn't always translate to women, except for Nicole Kidman. but you have to just accept who you are, take good roles, do good work, and you can transition to, like, different types of roles and do great, you know, great movies, and you can work forever, you know. It's all up to you, and obviously I'm sure she's going to get better and better, and if you work on your craft and, you know, take different parts, like, she obviously, she knows how to act, you know. It's just a matter of, like, whether she's committed to it. Like, some people just do it for the money and for the fame and you know, and don't want to do the hard work. But those who want to work hard, like a Meryl Streep or a Nicole Kidman, like, they have, like, lasting power. You know?